Welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
Now, Q, what have you been playing over the last week or so?
Oh, I gotta tell you, what I picked up? The 51 games in one Clubhouse Games.
Okay, that Nintendo Switch one, yeah.
Yes, and so you actually have the distinct honor of podcasting with a Mancala master right now.
Wow, that's Go or Reversi, right? Same game?
No, Mancala is, well, I don't know what Reversi is. Mancala is the one where there's kind of a wooden board. There's like 8 slots on either side.
Oh, that's right. I think we spoke about this game on the show before, actually.
Yes, so my wife taught me how to play it, and get this, she would hate, she doesn't listen to this show, so it doesn't matter, but she'd hate me for dragging her like this. She taught me incorrect rules to that game. I don't know if she was playing house rules or like a simplified version of it, but it's always interesting when these sort of physical board game collections come out in digital, whether it be Uno or whatever, because, whatever house rules you may have had, or like Monopoly, like, is it when
that's the big one.
Yeah. If you land on Go, is it double? Is it not double? Like, what are the rules? How do you go straight to jail? So playing them digitally, of course, it just enforces it on you. And so it's cool visiting some of these physical games in their digital form.
Wow.
How about you? What are you up to?
Well, I've been doing some computer repair, so I've been kind of stress testing it with all sorts of different games. So it's a lot of kind of hopping into things quickly and not really spending too much time in any single one of them. But I started Red Dead Redemption 2 again on PC this time, and man, it's impressive. I mean, everyone knows this, but like just being back in that world is like, wow, I just kind of forgot how great it felt to just be out in nature.
Beautiful. And even just I think if I revisited that game, I eventually hit a point where I was like just mission, mainlining. And I think now that I've seen it, I could go back and just enjoy like the hunting and just let it be a fishing sim. Yeah. Although is the online chill? I can never tell because whenever I hear about GTA Online,
I've never done the online before.
Yeah, I feel like anytime I hear about like Rockstar Online games, they're like aliens are invading and there's heists and you got to do all this stuff. I just want to relax and fish or something.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Grand Theft Auto Online just to kind of try it out way back in the day. And it was kind of what you would expect, like people just like driving up and shooting you for no reason. It's just it's not really a simulation of the type of city that I want to live in.
Right. That was my experience as well. And it all felt a little... it was like, what if Grand Theft Auto, but aspects of being a very durable, powerful character were removed, right?
Anyways, let's get to our own video game pitches. I think you're going first today.
Okay, well, today I have, I recently watched Bram Stoker's Dracula, and I was thinking a lot about maybe doing something that was a vampire game, but kind of in the vein of Rainbow Six Siege or Friday the 13th, where you are playing, one player gets to be a vampire who's trying to break into a house, a castle, you name it, and maybe there's, 2 to 4 other players who are on a team of humans who are trying to survive the night. You can maybe do, the sort of zombie wave barricade stuff we've seen before, boarding up windows and all of that. But I could also see us getting into classes, like let someone play as a priest and priests can bless water. And then you get like holy water as a weapon on the field. So there's a lot more we could do with it, but I'll leave it there.
Interesting. We'll go ahead and start the clock there. I think I kind of lost the thread here. Are you a vampire trying to get into a house, or are you in the inside trying to keep the vampires out?
Well, if it was a multiplayer game, I think you could have people playing any role. Sure. But let's talk about first, I guess, the role of the vampire trying to break into the house.
I think before we get emails in, one of the kind of defining things of vampire lore is that they aren't allowed to cross the threshold of a home unless they're invited in.
Yeah, so. That's right. I guess every match would have to open up with a cordial invitation or something to a party.
I mean, a Hitman type of game would actually be a pretty ideal vampire
game. Yeah, game.
It would be a single player. You wouldn't, the same kind of tricks wouldn't work in multiplayer. But one of the interesting things about vampires, I really love vampire fiction, is that, they're not like physically imposing, but they're more kind of socially imposing monsters. You know, they're monsters that are protected by society because they're, you know, rich and because, you know, they're the type of people that, you know, the people who are lower down in the social structures don't question. And so they're able to, you know, be weird and eccentric, and people are allowed to, you know, not leave their house without anyone really asking questions, because you don't ask questions at the count.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. It's the idea of being able to play with the social dynamics of a protected class. Like if especially in the, you know, traditional Dracula fiction, like it's an honor to have Dracula come visit, you know, your house. So I do like the idea of maybe there's some aspect of it that is just trying to infiltrate the house or trying to be invited to the house in some way. Although I don't, if people are on explicit teams, I could see that being hard to pull off.
Yeah. So there are characters that you would have reason to invite in. The vampire, I mean, you could do like a spy party type of thing where the vampire knows that you're going to, maybe there's even a house party going on and you don't want to cancel the house party. And, but so you need to invite your guests. One of them has been replaced by the vampire, and you have to find kind of like telltale signs without like freaking your house guests out.
That's cool. Yeah. Cause it's also silly, right? Like in all this vampire fiction, generally the person who's the vampire is a little pale. They're usually kind of strange looking. And so I like the idea of, you know, there's not any preset look to the character, and instead all the characters are generated in, and you don't know necessarily. I almost feel like you have to go under the guise of like everybody. Maybe this is all one big like party in the, I don't know, God, what year vampire fiction like traditionally takes place. I know castles tend to get involved, and manors and abbeys.
I think Dracula was written in what, like 1897, if I'm going to put a date on it.
Yeah, that feels good. That's very specific for not being sure. 1897. Yeah. So one of the things I was thinking about, right, is like if you're a vampire, you probably have access to becoming a bat or potentially some mist or something. You could potentially take somebody else's form and use the deception. But of course, one of the other things that got me thinking about vampires this past week was your tweet about what if vampires were the only ones with reflections. And so finally, a game that actually has a mechanical game reason to have great mirrors.
Reminds me of the Mel Brooks movie, Dracula, Dead and Loving It, where Leslie Nielsen is playing Dracula, and there's this whole scene where he's dancing in a ballroom, and there's very apparently no reflection on him because one of the entire like walls is a mirror. And that's kind of an amusing situation. But so maybe... one of the things I was thinking of, there's a game called Party Hard where it's kind of like a top-down kind of pixel arty type of game where there's a big party of people. You have to kind of stealth around and murder people at this kind of rave party and try to like hide their bodies before anyone else finds them and just basically see how much of the party you're able to whittle down, which I was always kind of put off by the premise. It seems, I mean, I'm used to playing very violent video games, but like that just seemed particularly barbaric in a way.
Yeah.
Very antisocial. But in the case of a vampire, I think like a kind of a rave would be the most interesting setting for a vampire to be in, because there's you could wear whatever you want. You know, everyone's dressed weird at raves. There's the kind of flashing lights and the loud music, a lot that, you know, is kind of distracting and easy to kind of get lost in the crowd, and you could potentially, you know, take people out without being noticed. And, you know, I think on both sides, whether you're detecting the vampire or whether you are the vampire trying to hide in with the crowd, it's kind of an ideal setting.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And, you know, I was also thinking, like, if you do classes of different people, like let's say that the people who are defending the castle, or maybe like you can also have a match where, you know, one group's job is to protect the bystanders. Like you have your dedicated vampires are a known problem. You have your dedicated vampire security. Like if you did vampire hunters, for example, maybe over the course of a match, like a vampire can choose to do sort of small feeds on people so that they regain health. Maybe they do complete feeds if they have the time and can stay in cover, in which case you can eliminate another player. And then, of course, right, the dynamic of being able to turn other people into vampires. I do like that. One of the things I think is so attractive to me about the Friday the 13th game, even though I hear it's very janky, is that like the feeling of, can you survive the night with Jason on the loose? And the feeling of like, can you figure out who the vampire is, or can you track down and destroy the vampire? It almost is a little Agatha Christie in its construction.
I was thinking another kind of fun premise, and maybe this is something different entirely, but almost playing kind of like the Jaws Mayor, but in Transylvania, where you're trying to kind of like keep tourist season open while also like warding away vampires and werewolves and zombies and things that are potentially attacking. So trying to kind of like keep the tourists from noticing all the supernatural horrors of the town, whether you are like an armed vampire hunter that's kind of guarding a tour group discreetly, or whether you're kind of a mayor level making like policy changes to keep the supernatural forces at bay. I don't know.
I also have here, like, I do like the idea of if you made this a lot more arcadey in its construction, like bringing in Super Smash Brothers, like play as a percentage health remaining, play as a stock number of lives per player, and play as like time till dawn. And then like, if you have a vampire slayer as a class, let's say that this is a person who's extra strong or extra capable. Well, that the risk reward there, right, is if the vampire can defeat or feed off of the vampire slayer, then you almost get like a super vampire predator who can start having access to, you know, a wider array of powers.
Yeah, that's interesting. So like a vampire would take on the, you get a little hint of that in Dracula, where you can kind of like sense somebody's like memories or read their thoughts or something if he feeds on their blood. Yeah, so if you could somehow use feeding on the other characters as a way of kind of like maybe planting spies within a group, or gaining access to their memories and getting some key intel on the other side.
I like the idea of and that actually gives incentive to the vampire to not fully kill anyone, right? If they want to have a constant pool to feed off of. So if you give the vampire then, like, let's say the vampire has to wander around almost blindly in these semi-complex spaces, like potentially feeding off of one person, you can now like see through walls or track other players for a temporary amount of time, or pieces of the map are revealed to you because they're in that person's, you know, experiences.
That's interesting. Let's close that down, put a stake in it. Let's come up with a name. I mean, it would be kind of funny to call it "The Stakes Are High" and then have the logo be like somebody holding a wooden stake.
Yeah, or, I mean, I'm sure this is already the name of the game. I'll just go a little bit more pithy on you and just call it High Stakes.
High Stakes. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. That's a good pun. All right. Let's go over to my pitch today. This kind of following on from our very musical episode 2 weeks ago, I'm going to be doing a game you can play with a piano keyboard. So one player goes through a 3D game, kind of like Journey, you know, using a standard controller or keyboard and mouse, whatever. Kind of an exploration type of game. The other player is kind of like the Navi to Link in Ocarina of Time or something like that.
Okay.
They're kind of like an ethereal presence, and you can, you have more information about the surroundings, you have, you know, greater kind of insight into the puzzles and that kind of thing. And the only way that you can communicate with this randomly paired online co-op partner is through piano noises. So you can hit the piano keys, and you have to find a way to turn that into a functional language you can use to guide the other player. So I'm going to go ahead and start the clock there.
I don't know if you've recently seen any of these. There's been a couple of people that have been putting together YouTube videos where they're kind of playing and smashing piano keys to the speech of other people.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's interesting, right? Because like what they're doing is they're creating or they're replicating that person's sense of rhythm and the sing-songy tone of their voice all with piano keys. And I don't know if you didn't pair it with the dialogue, if it would make even any sense. Or it would just sound like a series of strange noises, but That's what this kind of reminds me of like, could you develop a language beyond the, of course, like A through G that you're working with on a piano?
There's a piano bar in LA somewhere, and it's the gimmick is that it has, you know, like a haunted piano or like a player piano or something like that, but it is actually somebody playing the piano remotely. And the piano that's in the room is just, you know, looks unmanned and the keys moving on its own and everything. And so you can actually go up to The empty piano and take, you know, say a request, and it will respond with either like a, you know, a series of notes like a dun dun, like I don't know that song, or, you know, another kind of chime for like, yes, I can do that. So I think it'd be pretty easy to come up with at least like affirmative yes or no answers. But when it comes to, you know, maybe going right, you can do kind of a strum up the keys, and going left, a strum down the keys. But it'd be, you know, to navigate in 3D space, you'd have to come up with, seems like a pretty elaborate language.
Yeah, I could almost see like, you know, being a play a little piano, and I could almost see like using like a chord or using the rhythm of a chord to like push your character forward. And if you do like, sort of a 1, 2, 3, imagine your thumb, middle finger, and pinky going up, rolling in succession is kind of moving forward, and then pinky down to thumb is kind of walking backwards or something like that. Something to sort of communicate the feeling forward and backward motion. But of course, turning, I think you almost have to get into like glissando land. Are you familiar with the term?
No, I don't know that one.
So the glissando is the very popular, like you hear it in pop music sometimes, which is just somebody rolling their fingers all the way up and down the piano. Oh, so you get the like the chubby checker sort of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Do you, like I said, pop music and chubby checker? That's where my brain is today. So maybe up front, what we could do is like have you record into the game, like it says, program your yes response or program your no, and program like maybe you do more like a context sensitive, you know, Resident Evil / Zelda style action button, and like program what your action button is. And you can write it as complicated or as simple as you like, but it reads your timing. Of course, it maybe gives a little fudge in the input or whatever, but it reads your timing and it reads the notes. And if you don't enter it, then you don't press that button. So it's almost like build your own controller.
To be a conversation between two humans actually playing the game.
Got it.
So one of them holding an actual game controller, you know, that person could have voice chat back to the piano player, but the piano player, the only way that they can communicate with whatever player they're kind of randomly paired up with is through the piano. So, you know, the person can kind of ask, you know, questions, but eventually you're going to have to come up with a language that's fluent enough where you can, you know, make, you can advise pretty quickly.
I could almost see the person who's running the controller having to be like, should I go right or left? Like kind of prompting for the notes that they want to hear, from the piano player. That's interesting. What other kind of dynamics are there? I'm trying to think of like the piano player at the bar. I wonder if there's a system of like, when there's effective communication in a session, can you like leave, you know, a tip in the fishbowl or something for the piano player?
Yeah, there could be unlockables, or I mean, that could just be the only way for this other player to progress through the game is to kind of escort somebody else through it. It's just these kind of differing roles. I think the biggest thing that I want to see if we can avoid is like, I want to actually encourage them to form a language instead of turning every possible junction into a yes or no question, because yes or no, that's easy to do, you know, one for yes, two for no, or a high note for yes, low note for no, that's easy. But like, I want them to be able to come up with some sort of a more complex language rather than like taking two steps forward, asking, you know, do you want me to turn right? Do you want me to go forwards? Do you want me to go left?
Right. It's not fun to ask those questions. I think what you'd have to do, right, potentially, is what if we give the person who's playing the piano, not necessarily sheet music, but almost like sheet music, the ability to look ahead, right? Mm-hmm. And the ability to see that an enemy is near, or see that maybe the person doesn't have full vision into where they're stepping or something like that. And now you almost develop the Marco Polo or the hot and cold version of this, where the piano player can develop a language of like scary sounding music to warn the player that something is coming. Mm. You almost saw some version of this in the piano player that had to do Whose Line Is It Anyway, right? A piano player that almost scores an improv scene in real time.
Yeah,
so maybe the piano player just gets to see like something beautiful is happening, something dangerous is going to happen or something like that. And they just have to respond.
I always think that's so impressive. Anyone that's able to play music along with improv, you know, and to be able to come up with, I've seen that done live a few times as well. And it's just like, I mean, that would be so fun both for like the improv players and for the pianist, if you had the musical talent to do it. But like, I would just love to, you know, put on a scene and have it kind of scored, you know, on the moment.
A story for another day, but I actually had the pleasure of doing that a couple times.
Oh, cool.
And on an improv troupe I was at. So hard. And you leverage your rehearsal a lot with those people in that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think it would be cool if the piano player has vision into a layer of information that the other person doesn't have and can steer it that way. Or also just like maybe the piano player gets something as, you know, getting abstract prompts like something is breathtaking. You know, give the piano player an 8-bar beat to just play whatever they want as a cutscene plays out or something like that. And then now the person on the other end can sort of save those moments or share them out. And you're like, oh, look at how this person who couldn't see the scene going down decided to score it.
I mean, just think of like the YouTube videos of, you know, everyone would kind of get used to the game being played with very minimal piano inputs. But then, you know, if somebody is like an expert pianist or something, you know, you get a Grant Kirkhope on the other side or something like that, then, you know, they're out there kind of scoring the whole game as they go and, you know, still communicating when things need to be communicated, but filling those other moments of just adventuring with piano music. That would be a fun experience. You'd be really lucky to be paired up with somebody like that.
Yeah, I think you'd get a lot of good YouTube/ popular gaming website here clips of we got the guy who composed the Assassin's Creed soundtrack to play a round of this with a stranger.
Yeah,
it's almost like a game with an ever evolving soundtrack, which I think is interesting. I wonder if like when a play session is over, if there's some way to like favorite a session or return to it or be able to just play the game again with a particular player's score, just so you can revisit and be like, wow, that maybe one person just captured a moment so effectively with their performance.
Yeah, maybe it automatically kind of records the, you know, piano input throughout the entire game, and then it'll allow you to kind of like download the soundtrack of your play session.
Yeah, that would, if they stored it with like MIDI or whatever, that would be pretty efficient as long as they had good sound samples. I would definitely be the first to sign up for the pedal attachment for this thing.
Oh yeah, that's DLC. We're out of time. Let's give it a name.
I'm trying to think of, there's a cool music term. Agitato is agitated.
Agitato. It's like that anime on Netflix, right? Agitato, I'll take your word for it, as a musical term. As a somebody who's played music some years myself and hosts a music podcast, I should probably have a larger musical vocabulary than I currently do.
Yeah, that's, it's okay. Weird. It's like a bunch of Italian nonsense that has to...
Those Italians have a different word for everything.
I know. It's almost like a whole different language when you think about it.
Let's move over to our community and see what our always reliable Mike Esquera has to say for us today. Mike says, many years ago, I really got into mobile games like Papa Sangur, The Nightjar, or Blindside, where players had to blindly navigate a virtual playing area using only binaural sound, narration, and variations in the volume and direction of sound effects would indicate how close the player was to their goals, threats, etc. This might seem silly, but I'm interested to see how you would create a story justification for a VR game that's set in pitch black or near pitch black environment. The game would use Otacon-style narrator character to help you through the darkness and occasional visible goals like lit checkpoints along your path. As always, I'm eager to hear what you can do with this idea. Keep up the great work. Cool, thank you. Another game of being guided from afar. I'm going to go ahead and start the clock.
So what I think Mike's onto something here with the VR medium. Like if it gave us nothing else, one of the things I think it gave us is really cool directional audio. Like I feel like when I am playing a great directional audio VR game that the sound is super effective. So I'm trying to think now, like, because VR's big thing is the visual, right? And he's kind of taking that away from us, or at least limiting us in it. So what, you know, Hellblade played with this a little bit.
Yeah, I think it sort of makes sense to do like a, you know, you can hear kind of the dripping on the cave wall or something like that to try to like form kind of a three-dimensional space. Have to be really exceptional about kind of creating a, but like, you know, when you hear like a good, like binaural audio, you know, walk through the forest or something like that, then you really can picture, you know, the texture of the ground and the, where the creek is next to you and the, you know, how close the trees are. Like I can see right. all that working. It would also be interesting to incorporate like having to perform combat as well. You know, do you ever get that where like you're playing and either, you know, you'll accidentally sit on the remote control and change the channel, or, you know, an error message will pop up on Windows minimizing your screen, but like the audio is still playing. So you can still like, you're right in the middle of a combat encounter. And so you can just barely kind of like, you know, right. using the audio clues, kind of like, you know, fuss your way out of it.
Yeah, you can hear that you're being owned, but you can't quite.
I mean, there are some games where it's like, there will be an audio cue for like when they're about to strike. And so you can perform the parries and the riposte and stuff like almost better if you're not looking than when you are.
Yeah, I'm wondering too, I'm thinking about like the Otacon character or somebody being like, hey, be careful, like the monster's winding up now or something like that. Somebody who's like explaining to you the animations. This is almost like a text-based adventure game, only like a voice-acted text-based adventure game, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those games are just kind of like black screens with text on them. You know, you awaken in front of a fireplace, there's a road to the north and a road to the west type of thing. Yeah, I guess you could do something that's pretty straightforward like that. I like the idea of using naturalistic sound more than just narration, though. That feels like it's treading pretty close to things that have already been done.
Yeah, I think like if you could do something where you're playing with light and darkness, let's say we bring in a Soulsian sort of bonfire system, you can actually see like as you move towards, like potentially you can see nothing really on screen except for the bonfire out in the distance, assuming that it's not obfuscated by a wall or something like that. And so the constantly having to be guided to the bonfire, but also waiting and listening. I think you could even remove the narrator if you had really interesting haptic touch potentially, or haptics in the game where you can feel your footsteps, or imagine using like some HD rumble, if you will, to be able to tell, okay, I'm walking on grass right now. Or the feeling of it feels like when I'm taking this step that like I'm stepping into something wet based on, you know, what I'm hearing and feeling.
Yeah, in a way, this is kind of like the Unfinished Swan.
I've never played it.
Oh, you really should track that one down. I don't know if it's, I know it was on PlayStation 3. I don't remember if it ever made it onto PC, or I presume it's available on PS4 now, but it's really worth experiencing. It's by the same people and kind of tangentially linked to the story of What Remains of Edith Finch. So if you enjoyed that
one.
There
we go. I got to play.
Yeah, this one's really good as well. But basically, for the first level anyways, you are wandering around kind of a 3D space, first person perspective, but everything is completely white. Like you're in a, you know, one of those Daffy Duck cartoons where the entire world gets erased around him or something like that. So it's all white, but you have the ability to throw little blobs of ink. And as they splatter on the objects around you, you can start to kind of like form definition of shapes and make your way around this world just kind of based on where this ink splashes.
That's cool. I was just thinking, like, the intro, like the first opening minutes of this game, you could potentially give someone sight and take it away from them. So, like, establish.
That'd be helpful to kind of establish the scale of things and what enemies are supposed to look like and behave like before you kind of take all of that away.
Yeah, and then potentially there's, you saw me the other day play some Deep Rock Galactic. I do like the idea of, you know, having an ability or having something for your character that is, if you find, you can collect maybe like glow sticks and then crack them in half with your two hands and at least be able to hold them or throw them on the ground and get a small amount of ambient light. And then you could, you know, save glow sticks potentially for a boss encounter if you really need the visual aid. And of course, you get this really dramatic dynamic lighting based on wherever you placed it. Maybe you crack a bunch of glow sticks and actually light up the full boss combat arena and scale the difficulty for yourself, or you play the no glow stick run, in which case you're actually navigating in the dark and listening to the sounds. And it would be interesting to set it up as such that A, the player could potentially navigate the space. Because, like, you'd have to make it clear when you're against a wall, right? So maybe like, your default thing is, like, you almost have, like, a Snapple bottle cap type of clicker that you can just kind of, you have it in your hand. You actually have the ability to move your hand around because we're in VR space. And that would actually give you a pretty good sense of, like, oh, this sound is dying like an inch in front of me. I might be right next to a wall.
We've referenced before, there's a game called Beyond Eyes where you play as a blind girl, essentially, and you're walking around an undefined world. But as you get closer to the objects in your environment, and they start to kind of like pop into being and pop into color, it's, I don't know if it's like a really honest exploration of what it's like to be blind, but It's a very pretty game, and it does kind of play with that sense of sound. They kind of use the sound to justify when these objects are kind of popping into being. So if you'll hear a duck quacking, then you can get, you know, that's your clue that the duck is there. And, you know, the river, they'll kind of overemphasize that sound effect as the river is being colored in to kind of like show you how this girl is kind of piecing everything together.
I recently played this past weekend Superliminal, which is really love Superliminal.
Right, yeah. Yeah, actually, that's a local game from here in Seattle, and they've submitted to the Seattle Indies Expo for a number of years now, and so I've kind of followed that one through its development.
Wild. What a wild game. And yeah, I think I saw some early development videos, but what they managed to accomplish with this thing, I think it's like maybe 3 hours start to finish at most, maybe 2.5. But one of the things I thought was interesting in it is there's kind of, I don't want to spoil too much of it, but there is a puzzle in the game that plays with the ground that you walk on and its physicality. And I do think that, like, being able to give the player some, like, either you have to design this game with kind of no pits and no falling, or you have to give the player some tool to be able to predict where they're going to step or what a step in the wrong direction sounds like. Because I think, like, the best thing that could result from something like this is people literally almost having witness style notebooks where they're kind of sketching out in their mind, like, oh, I think this path is it's kind of a mountain and it's curving or something like that. Or I'm on the edge of something. Or give an in-game sort of mini map tile builder so you yourself can always piece together what the map actually is. So maybe after you've fully explored a space, you have the ability to understand its totality. And you don't want necessarily the I'm going to miss something feeling.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Being able to, like, yourself be able to kind of place tiles of light and stuff like that, so you can kind of mark where you've been and what you think the level will end up looking like.
Yeah, and then you could almost do like a pick cross or something at the end where you like superimpose the real map on the player drawn one and see how close
you get it. That's all the time we have there. Let's give it a name.
Ooh, beyond ears. No. It feels like it would be a cliche or something, but I don't know if it's like light in the dark or something like that.
Like, oh, it's like the Dio song, Rainbow in the Dark.
Yeah. Rainbow in the Dark is a pretty good title for a video game too.
Yeah. I don't think anyone else has used that one in the video game realm anyways. So I think that fits. It's evocative. Gosh, it kind of reminds me of the game Scanner Sombre. That one's another one to look up if you have the time.
Thank you
very much, Mike Esquera, as always, for writing in with your own game idea. If you, the listeners, have anything that you would like to put forward, then you can do so by emailing us, playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. While you're listening to things, why not go check out Sound of Play, The Sausage Factory, and the Cane and Rinse podcast.
All right, to take us out of the show today, I think you are quizzing me.
Oh, you better believe it. Are you ready for your redacted game?
I am.
Okay. Embark on a vast new redacted adventure as redacted, all with their own origins, redacted, and goals. The producers of the Redacted series at Redacted have brought a new world to life through a mix of, I apologize for this, redacted, redacted, and redacted visuals. Where to begin, who to team up with, where to go next, only you can decide. I have a little bit more if you want me to keep going.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. Each Redacted can use a distinct redacted, a specialized way of achieving objectives and interacting with people you encounter. Combat revolves around the redacted system, a fusion of redacted, battling, and modern enhancements.
Modern enhancements?
Yeah.
What does that even mean? It's like steroids?
Yeah, that's right. They juiced up these combat mechanics, I guess.
Okay, so this is a series that is an old series that is getting kind of a revitalization.
Potentially. I feel like you're a little cool to cold there.
All right, so you're playing as a team of people, but you can kind of choose your character. Each one has their own kind of specialization. So
yes,
that's like everything from Lego Star Wars to... I mean, it's a pretty broad net we're casting here.
I think this line here is a good good prompt of the producers of the Redacted series at Redacted have brought a new world to life through a mix of redacted, redacted, and redacted visuals.
And you said that was going to be helpful?
Yes, I think like visuals and the fact that whoever made this has made other similar series in the past.
Okay. One of the things that I was thinking of was the Wonderful 101, but I know it's not that because you're not really choosing individual characters to play as. You're kind of more playing as the conglomerate. Just kind of walk through my thought process here.
Yeah. You're definitely warmer than guessing it's an old series that's been revived.
Okay. All right. Are we talking like spiritual sequel here where it's like, you know, we're obviously drawing upon people with a legacy. Is this something that kind of marries naturally into what they did before?
I would say so. I would definitely say so.
Interesting. And how recent are we talking?
This game has been released within the last, it is in this console generation.
Okay, cool. All right. This console generation. Multiple characters you choose between. They each have different abilities.
A battle system that's a fusion of redacted battling and modern enhancements.
Is this, and this will count as one of my guesses, this is kind of more broad than, you know, but this counts. Is this somewhere within the Warriors series?
Good guess, but no, it is not.
Okay. All right.
You got it so easy last time I quizzed you, so I really wanted to give you something here.
No, this is good. All right, read me a piece of it again that might be helpful to get me back on the right track.
Yes. After the mix of redacted, redacted, and redacted visuals, where to begin, who to team up with, where to go next. Only you can decide. I think the where statements there are meaning.
Where to begin? That's not something that a lot of games give you the option of choosing.
That's right.
This isn't like a... This isn't like an MMO or something, right?
This is not an MMO.
Okay, because that's the only thing where I can think of where you're really kind of like choosing your starting point.
I know, but there is yet something else. Another game on the table that does let you do that.
Okay, interesting. Combat system in there as well.
Ooh, I hope you're going to be kicking yourself if you don't get that.
You see, I just feel like there's not like, there's usually one piece of the puzzle that's just like so, you know, something to really grab onto. This time I'm still, even this far into it, still kind of flailing for like a real anchor.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting because it is, here's my last hint that I'll give you. Mm-hmm. It is not a game in a series. It has no ties to any other known IP.
Hmm. All right. So it's not like, it's not Destiny. It's not, gosh.
Okay, the last hint I will give you, and this is the real, real last, is that you had the right, you were kind, I would say it is known for being on a Nintendo platform.
Okay. Known it's not, for being...
It's, I don't want to say it's an exclusive. I don't think it is, but it might be.
Okay. It might be an exclusive.
Let me... No, actually, I'm looking here on the Metacritic page. It is not... It's also on PC and Stadia. So it's not an exclusive.
PC and Stadia?
Yeah, I know. How... Thought you'd get a chuckle out of that.
Gosh, if I was more familiar with that library, that would really narrow it down.
I was just thinking that that's a dead ringer if we just all knew what the hell was on that server.
Okay, commonly associated with Nintendo. Is this an indie game?
Absolutely not.
Okay, interesting. Who's creating stuff that is best known for being on Nintendo platforms that's not an indie?
It's not an indie.
Only Ubisoft, really.
Okay. It feels like you're calling it.
Let me get one more good guess out there, and then we can call it good. Okay, let's see. I'm going to say Mario and Rabbids.
Ooh. You were definitely... you were into the right space of like big publisher. The description is embark on a vast new role-playing adventure as one of eight travelers, all with their own origins, paths, and goals. I have basically had to kill the word path throughout this description. The producers of the Bravely series at Square Enix have brought a new world to life through a mix of CG, pixel art, and HD 2D visuals. All I feel would have given it away. Maybe pixel art, I think, could have been. But knowing that it's a pixel art hybrid, I feel like also gives it away.
Yeah.
Embark on where to begin, who to team up with. And then it says each traveler can use a distinct path action, a specialized way of achieving objectives and interacting with people you encounter. Combat revolves around the boost system, a fusion of traditional turn-based battling and modern enhancements. Octopath Traveler.
Wow. Very good. That was a good one.
Nice. You got me. I'm wondering now if it was misleading, but I do feel like we all saw that with like the Switch reveal and think of it as being kind of this Switch.
Yeah, definitely. It was on Switch like I think a year before anything else.
Okay, that makes sense to me. But it was so funny because if you had zoomed in once you knew it wasn't indie, if you had just gotten to Square, that would have unlocked it for you.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about Square. That's a good one.
Yeah, they barely make these type of games anymore, but here you go. Well done. Well done. I tricked you. I got your back.
Yep, that's right. I'll have to get you next week.
Love it.
All right, next week I'll do something. We'll do like Dark Sector or something like that.
Oh, God. I don't stand a chance.
No. We'll keep it coming. Come back next week to see if you at home can guess faster than we can. I wonder how many of the audience guessed it this time around. You have to, you know, honor system. Who got it right? Right.
Yeah,
in.
And if
We're
you
curious.
Don't have a idea for a video game to pitch, feel free to send us your redacted version of a Metacritic game description and, of course, include the link to Metacritic so we actually know the answer.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Very cool. Well, that'll do it for us this week. We'll catch you again next week.
Bye. We'll be right back.